Okay, you're not hearing the music yet, because there's a little intro that we have. Say hi, William.
Hello, William.
Good. I said to say hi, William.
I always get it wrong.
Don't you look silly? So we're having technical difficulties because my computer is fucked up. And assuming we haven't ever named an episode Technical Difficulties, which I feel like we might have, I'm going to name this episode Technical Difficulties. So we got about a half hour recording, but it was choppy, sort of.
Yeah.
It has little skips, but it was some pure gold, so I'm not getting rid of it. What I'm going to do is this episode is a mystery episode in its entirety, so enjoy that. But afterwards, after the end, outro, everything, about 34 minutes worth of other episode that we recorded just as a bonus. So you can listen to it if you want, if it's too enough to listen to it, all right? So enjoy that and enjoy this.
Happy New Year.
That too.
It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay. Is going.
Okay.
This is the show. If you're expecting something more exciting than this, you should turn the channel.
And then you should go find the person who told you to expect something more exciting than this. And
go ahead, finish that sentence. I want to hear this. What should you do to them?
You should take all their pennies.
There we go. How evil. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast that apparently you can change the channel if you don't like it.
So that's right.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's canon now. I invented that.
canon.
We need a wiki.
Yeah.
A Magical Talking Hat wiki.
All the little things that people who listen all the time know that casual listeners might not.
Because, you know, we are pretty casual listeners and we don't know. I'm experimenting with mic positioning.
I can see that.
I know, but they can't.
I know, I'm just saying that I can.
I'm experimenting with mic position, and William has his eyes open. Anyway, hello, I'm Tony.
And I'm William.
And this is episode... That's your bit.
I don't know what episode it is.
That's true.
We don't know what episode that this is. Because.
And more importantly, perhaps, we don't care.
That's right, we don't care.
No. For those of you just joining us, we don't know what episode it is. Sorry.
This is what we call a mystery episode.
Yes.
Because...
I feel it's not that mysterious anymore. I mean...
Well, let me explain what a mystery episode is.
Please
you see,
do.
There are a couple guys who usually record this podcast, and they've got this thing about how they've got to post a new episode every single Thursday. But sometimes they're not around on Thursday, just like anybody, you know. Nobody's going to be around every single Thursday to do the same thing every single Thursday night.
I knew a guy.
Okay, well, anyhow. So
he was weird.
So sometimes they're not there. And what happens is we, their alternate reality, alternate dimension selves,
you
end up getting pulled into it so that we're the ones recording that Thursday. And you can tell that we're not the same guys that usually record it because we have goatees.
Evil.
Okay, so that's what's going on here. Otherwise. Yes.
Otherwise, it would be normal. For those of you who've never heard an episode, there's a hat. It's magical. Has its own email address.
I'm sure that sounds really annoying.
Probably. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Once again. TheMagicalTalkingHead@gmail.com. This is like an evil NPR voice.
and people who aren't in our universe, but presumably in yours, you have people over there, right? They write into that email address with little things like comments, questions, topics, mostly topics, questions, comments. For the hat. And the hat magically on its own transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat in both dimensions. Maybe all dimensions, we don't even know. But the point is, we, the backups for the guys who really don't want to be doing it even anyway, so imagine how we feel.
Yeah.
Draw out those note cards at random, read them on the air, and then talk about them until we're bored. We do that for about an hour, and that's our show.
Welcome to it.
If you want it, it's yours. give us an offer.
If you want it.
comes with a free small gray cat with a goatee. Even if you don't want the show, would you like the cat? There's some sound effects in the back. I think that's from the evil producer listening to something on her.
Yes, our producer also iPad. Has a tea.
Yeah, it's hot. Not gonna lie.
Not gonna lie.
No, I love that phrase. I've always enjoyed that phrase. But people always say it to the cops. I always find that hilarious. Not gonna lie. They're like, oh, really? Okay, I'll make note of that. Swears... crosses his heart that this whereas most people I assume are gonna lie, this guy's told me he's not, so
yep,
so it'll probably be fine.
Yeah, you can believe it. You can probably take it right
that
to the bank
in my report. I don't know what cops do. I mean, I don't get how paperwork works. So William, tell me, how's your evil life been since the last time we did this, which I don't know when that was.
It's been pretty evil. Yeah.
Has it really?
Yeah.
I feel like you say that, but I mean, you wouldn't be that evil by non-evil universe standards, and you're in the evil universe.
Yeah,
I
know,
feel like you're the closest thing we have to Superman or something. But with no powers. You're just Clark Kent. You're this world's Clark Kent.
That might be so.
Because I'm pretty confident that as cool as Superman was, Clark Kent did worse things than just take pennies. One time,
he didn't have a goatee, though.
One time, he shot a little tiny Superman out of his fingertips. I think we've already talked about that before, so I'm not going to follow that up. But that was awesome. He would shoot a little tiny Superman with the same powers as Big Superman, except Big Superman didn't have the powers while Little Superman did. And he got jealous of Little Superman. And he sent Little Superman to go fight a meteor headed towards Earth that he knew had kryptonite in it. Because he was an asshole. And he wanted Little Superman to die. And Little Superman did. But he did it saving Big Superman, and Big Superman felt sad. But Little Superman also died, so he got what he wanted. None of this is lies. This is a real thing that happened in the comics. It's an honest-to-goodness real thing. Aliens gave Superman the power to make a little tiny Superman. And he got jealous of it and sent it on a suicide mission.
I love how you say call it it.
Him. BB Superman. It was like 6 inches tall. And here's the thing.
Okay, the thing.
What was the point?
I don't know.
Why? Why did it? Why is it better to make a tiny Superman? Is it just more impressive? People are like, wow, I would not have expected that kind of inhuman strength from someone only 6 inches tall.
I don't know.
I would expect the ability to lift an airplane from this normal human-sized man. But when it's a tiny one, it's more fun. It's just, it's cheerier.
I don't know.
This is what non-evil universes do. I don't understand it.
I don't either.
I do understand that he was jealous and said, I want a suicide mission. I totally get that. I used to be able to make a little tiny version of myself with my fingertips.
And then you'd get jealous.
And it would have the same powers that I did, but I couldn't use my powers at the time. So, like, I was unable to, like, sit down and nap and play video games. And so I got jealous. So I sent it on a suicide mission.
To Muzzle.
To Muzzle. I sent it to Muzzle on, and it never came back.
Oh, man.
But I got my powers back, so I'm okay. I didn't have the guilt that Superman did.
That's good.
Now, did it die from exhaustion, like with a tiny lawnmower, or did it get eaten up by the big one because it was totally incapable of handling a full-size lawnmower?
I don't know.
Both of them seem plausible. Maybe he had a little. Maybe the lawnmower had the ability to make a tiny version of itself with the same powers as the original.
Except that it couldn't mow the lawn.
It couldn't mow the lawn while that was going on, and maybe his just his little tiny heart. Which I gotta be honest, was not that healthy to begin with. Just gave up.
Maybe. That hurts.
If you can make a little tiny version of yourself with the same powers as you, but then you don't have the powers while you're doing it, tell us about it on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com.
That's so funny.
And also notify the government, because they're gonna wanna keep tabs on you. Alright, Jerry. Had it up.
Yeah.
This is a pretty big experiment I'm doing. If this sounds terrible, like, people are going to hate this whole episode.
Well, yeah. I'm guessing that's what's going
to
happen.
I don't listen to it. So. The little thing's not going real high. Like, the little, no.
I don't know.
That's why I'm talking softly.
Yeah, you're controlling your volume.
Very carefully. I don't have a pee guard, so that might still be an issue.
Anonymous wants to know what time.
Anonymous wants to know what
do
time.
Do you typically go to bed? Why do you want to know that, Anonymous?
That is creepy.
Why do you want to know what time we typically go to bed? Are you waiting for us to go to sleep so that you can break into our house and do some?
Do you think something? Anonymous might be Freddy Krueger? Is that you're thinking?
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like Freddy could just figure it out. I mean.
Well, I'm not going to tell anybody what time I typically go to bed. No,
I don't think you have a typical time you go to bed.
I probably don't.
I think your sleep schedule is a
mess. But I'm not going to
say
one way or the other. I will neither confirm nor deny my bedtime.
I will tell you everything about mine, because what the fuck do I care? Honestly, the times when I'm not asleep, I might as well be, so whatever. I mean, I'm just laying around doing nothing. So either way, if you're going to, like, attack me or whatever, it's about the same.
Yeah.
Sunday night through Thursday night, or really any night when I have to get up the next morning to go to work,
right.
I will typically be in bed by between like 7:45 and 8:30, I'd say, and I will often read until maybe a little after 8 or as late as sometimes 9, but usually not. And then I'll go to sleep. Because I wake up at 5:15.
Yeah, that's
and I like
that's
a good night's sleep. an 8:15 is exactly 9 hours. And that's awesome if I can do that. Normally, Friday and Saturday night, most of the time, I stay up much later because I like staying up late. And the producer doesn't like me sleeping all through the day, so we have a deal now. So I set the alarm on the weekend, too. I set it for 11 a.m. And so then I will stay up usually somewhere between 1 and 3 a.m.
Jeez. Yeah. That's late.
It's very late. And hard to do because my body's used to the other, but I like staying up late. It's fun. So I drink a lot of caffeine those nights. So when did you have a bedtime growing up?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Did it, what was, did it evolve, did it change? I assume it wasn't the same bedtime from age 1 to age 18.
Like. Yeah, it did. and there came a time where our bedtime wasn't really monitored at all.
Mm.
You know, by the time we were in high school, for example,
oh, yeah.
Bedtime wasn't really monitored. Probably junior high or maybe even like 5th and 6th grade, we could stay up like an hour later or something. But, you know, the conventional wisdom for a long time, I don't know what it is now, but it was that a kid needs typically about 11 hours of sleep. And so we were sent to bed.
I never heard that.
Whatever time it would take for us to get, you know, a little bit, not like right at 11 hours, you know, sent to bed a little bit beforehand so we had time to fall asleep.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever it would take for us to get 11 hours. And we would typically get up early in the morning because we lived out in the country to go to school. You know, the bus was going to come fairly early.
Milk the cows.
Well, we didn't have any cows, so. I mean, a lot of kids, you're right, a lot of kids got up a lot earlier than we did because they had chores to do before they went to school, but we didn't.
So. You were soft and lazy. So we could, you got to sleep in.
So we could stay up a little bit later than most kids, but not that much later.
I feel a little like Aubrey Plaza. It's kind of how she delivers stuff. My first bedtime that I remember was 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. 7 or 8.
At a certain part, it became 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
In the midst of that somewhere, there were times in my life where I would get a time to be in bed and then I would get an extra half hour to read. I was very encouraged from an early age, and I liked reading. And so at some point, fairly early on, it became like 8 o'clock, and then I could read until 8:30, I believe. And it may have been that when it was 9 o'clock, I could read until 9:30. I don't know. That's the range of my bedtimes, because then somewhere around, I'm going to say junior high age, I think. It never was official when I didn't have a bedtime anymore. It just sort of happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think some of it was I would be in my room alone more often at night. At a certain point, I got a TV in my room, things like this. And so, just, I was in my room, I wasn't particularly loud or anything, so nobody really worried about it, and it just sort of happened over time.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say right around my teenage years starting is probably when it began to disappear.
Well, you know, there comes a time where you know, the kid just has to know, or maybe for them to know, they're just going to have experienced the consequences of being tired during the day and realize, you know what, that wasn't very fun. And of course, yeah. A lot of kids do like to sleep. I mean, they don't actually mind going to bed.
At a certain point, I loved that.
On the weekend, they want to stay up, of course, but you know.
When I was, I remember being aware of that as a teenager, suddenly I could just sleep forever. And I'm like, when I was little, I could barely stay in bed till like 6 in the morning, and I would be so excited and up.
Yeah.
But that went away big time, and I haven't really come back from it. I love sleep. Some people don't. I don't believe the producer is particularly fond of sleep.
I'm not.
I love sleep.
I don't dislike it. I mean, you know, when it's time to go to bed, I'm ready.
You feel about sleep like you feel about food?
Yep, pretty much. Pretty much. It's the kind of thing. You have to do it. It's pleasant enough.
I love sleep in similar ways to me loving food, I'd say. I particularly like spicy sleep. And I can eat any sleep cold. Wait. I may have drifted there.
Yeah, I think you did.
We got a fair bit out of such a pretty straightforward question.
Did we?
Comparatively. All right, I'm going to answer one.
Okay.
I mean, draw one out.
Okay.
We can both answer
it. All right, we can both answer it, sure.
A lot of anonymous lately.
Yep.
Do you think maybe it's the hacker collective? Anonymous?
I'm going to say...
they've taken an interest in this, I'm nervous.
I'm going to say no.
I feel like we should be getting better ratings if it was them.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
This is intriguing.
Is it?
I think so.
Are you going to leave us in suspense then? For a little while?
No.
Okay.
All right. If you could live anywhere, what geography would you prefer? See, you feel like it's going to go one way. But at the last second, it switches it up.
Where do you want to go? Because you don't want to live here. Geographically speaking, you want to live
I would
near the mountains or something.
I agree. Well, there's a couple of factors. I mean, because we say geography. Mm-hmm. I think climate's also huge in this.
Okay.
In general, the Pacific Northwest is good on both of those, in general.
Which is where you're from.
But, yeah. and I think some of it is the geographic diversity to be within an hour or two of the ocean, the woods, the desert, the valley, whatever, the mountains, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like having options. But in general, I like a very temperate weather. Mm-hmm. My ideal weather, I would say, probably upper 60s in the daytime, upper 40s at night, moderate humidity. If I could find a place that was basically that range all the time, I'd like that. And actually, that might be San Francisco from what I hear. San Francisco might be pretty close to that.
Okay.
So, yeah, geographically speaking, I just want a bunch of stuff. So, like, an island wouldn't work. So I want access to coastal water and mountains and woods. At least those three. I need all of those. So, yeah.
Okay, that's a good answer.
How about you?
Oh, you know, I'm right where I want to be.
Geographically? You just want plains? What do you call them here? I don't know.
Well,
rolling hills of Iowa.
Tall grass prairie. And, yeah, that's what I like.
Dar Williams never had a way with women. But the hills of Iowa made her wish that she could.
Okay.
You ever heard that song?
No.
You should listen to Dar Williams. Dar Williams fucking loves Iowa.
Yeah?
She's way into Iowa. Yeah.
Yep, I like where I'm at.
Really? No interest in mountains or...
Nope.
Forests bigger than a block?
Well, I mean, I like...
The coast.
The woods, so to speak. But, yes. You know, like huge sprawling forests with really huge long-lived trees. Not necessarily. Yeah. I like the woods here in Iowa. the timbers, we call it.
We call it the really thick corn.
And I like, you know, there's some prairie restoration or prairie preserves here in Iowa that are just amazing. I love those places.
We got one in our backyard.
I love them.
That's what we say because we just gave up on it. We don't mow it or anything. We say we're sending it back to being wild prairie. Kind of looks like it.
I love the prairie. We've got some prairie restoration near our house, and I just love walking by there all year long. In the spring and in the summer and in the fall. I mean, it's constantly changing the type of plants that are flowering, and there's something flowering pretty much the whole time. And it just smells so good, and, you know, when you see rolling hills of prairie and the wind sort of making them look like waves. And the sound of it. I like the sound of the grass blowing more than I like the sound of ocean waves. So.
Keep going.
No, never mind.
Let's
draw another one.
I haven't learned to appreciate prairie. I've no interest. Did not like it at all when I first moved here. I've learned to appreciate it. It's nice.
And I like rivers and streams. And
I like those.
Most of the lakes we have around here are artificial, but you know we have some natural lakes too, and they're nice. And I prefer all of those types of bodies of water against the ocean, really. I like the ocean. I've been there. It's nice. And I like mountains. I've visited the mountains before. It's nice, but no place I'd want to live.
Real mountains or Appalachian mountains?
Hey, first of all, the Appalachian Mountains are real. But second of all, no, I've been to Colorado, Marble, Colorado, specifically. I stayed for some time in.
All right.
And we went to, you know, while I was there, we went to Aspen for a little while and to Colorado Springs. And the thing about that is...
What is the thing about that?
It was not, the mountains were pretty and it was kind of fun to travel in them, but boy. First of all, I think I got... You know, I did have some problems with the altitude.
Yeah, that'll get you.
But once you get over that, something else that bothered me that I couldn't wait to leave was I felt claustrophobic. I mean, in Marble, everywhere you looked was a wall of rock.
Oh, yeah.
And if you looked up, you saw the sky, but it was like a little hole because you could still see rock all around you.
And when I moved here...
I cannot stand that.
When I moved here, I got sort of an agoraphobia because the horizon was just a line, and it was way the hell out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all the roads go straight, and it's weird.
And
it sucks at the equinoxes and the solstices because the east, like, all the roads go in the cardinal directions, and right at the equinox, that means the sun is right along that path.
Yep.
And totally blinds you if you're trying to drive.
But that's what I grew up with, and that's what I like. I mean, a lot of people don't think of Iowa as big sky country, but it's a pretty big sky here.
It is a fairly large sky.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is what I like.
We have a much smaller sky in the northwest.
I like that I can drive out of town and still see what the Milky Way is supposed to look like. You know, I mean, there are people who don't realize what the night sky really looks like because of light pollution and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But on my farm, you still can see it. And you don't have to drive too very far outside of Coralville and Iowa City to see it. I like that.
We drove out in the middle of nowhere for that super bright full moon.
Yeah.
Back in, what was it, 01 or 2000 or something?
Not right one.
There. Somewhere around there. Couldn't have been 01. It was either 99 or 2000. Me and a friend went out for that. Oh, it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
All right.
I can't believe you've got that microphone just right up to your mouth. It's great.
I'm telling you, it's small on the thing.
This is addressed to me.
Ooh. I'll be quiet then.
William.
That's you.
Given you're not a foodie, would you consider eating Soylent?
Who's that from?
It doesn't say.
That's because it's creepy.
And then it says, yes, it's now real. No, Tony, it's not made of people. Now, how does this person know that?
Wait, what is it then?
Well, I believe even in the original story, Soylent is soy and lentils.
Oh.
Right? And Soylent Green was supposed to be specifically fortified with plankton or something, I thought.
Okay. I remember they had a variety of Soylent colors.
Yeah. That's my understanding of what Soylent was supposed to be.
Okay. Okay, if it's something that's made out of soy and lentils, you don't do soy.
Well, our house sort of cut down on that for a while for a variety of reasons, but I don't have a problem with soy.
Yeah, okay, I think you'd totally eat that then.
Yeah, I don't see why I wouldn't.
You probably have.
And I might...
Did you ever have those Soy Joy bars? They're still kind of around?
No.
Those are surprisingly tasty.
If Soylent Green was something like, it was fortified with, like, kelp, that would actually be very good, good for you.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. This person says they're not made of people. Well, how do we know that?
Well, really? It's also a dumb question that way. Would you eat soy and lentils? Yeah, you'd eat soy and lentils.
Well, a product made from soy and lentils.
You would. like, you could feed it to a rabbit, you could feed it to a worm. I want to know if it's people.
This is on a green card, even.
If it's people.
Yeah. Would I eat it if it's people?
Like, people that died of natural causes. Like, we're not farming them, per se.
You really think how they died is going to have some kind of bearing
on it? Well, I just want to specify that there is no issues of treatment or inhumane slaughter. These are people had a perfectly fine time. This dude, the dude in this Soylent bar right here, he was a lawyer. He was not a very good lawyer, but he had a wife and kids, and in general, he liked his life. And he died of embolism.
Okay, now,
And we made him into
this. Let's think
this
about
stuff.
This for a second. What would I say? You know what I'd say if there was chicken in it, or beef,
I
or
do.
Pork.
I do.
Why would it be a different answer if it's a person?
Well, why would it be no if it's got chicken in it?
Because I don't eat meat.
Why don't you eat meat?
You know why I don't eat meat. So no, why would I?
Why don't you eat meat?
No, the question is, why would I eat people if I don't generally eat meat?
Well, why don't you eat meat?
For a variety of reasons, which we've discussed.
I know vegetarians who I think would eat people, is what I'm saying.
What? No, you don't.
I do.
They wouldn't eat a cow, but they'd eat a person.
I know people whose vegetarianism is built entirely into their issues with the ethics around the treatment of animals.
Okay, so therefore, if a person sort of volunteered to be food and was not treated inhumanely, they'd be okay with it? Because those same people would not
be
okay.
Well, I still think they might be grossed out, but I mean, I don't think they would have an ethical conundrum with eating it. I know people like this who are vegetarian with the exception of what is referred to as righteous meat. You've heard this concept.
Oh, yeah, right, sure.
I feel that it's the same thing here. Essentially, if it's righteous Soylent...
Okay,
but so what are your specific reasons for not eating meat?
Probably more specific is they're not at the core ethical. It's more of a health thing. Like this is, you know,
okay,
an environmental thing. I mean, you know, the boots I'm wearing are leather boots. You know, to me, if I was an ethical vegetarian, I think I'd almost feel like I should be vegan in that case, which means I wouldn't wear leather, I wouldn't eat honey, but I don't really have a...
So you're a health vegetarian, I didn't realize. Okay.
Yeah, health and environment kind of thing, yeah. And and really, even probably more fundamental than that, as I'm sure I've often said, I've never really been that crazy about meat to begin with. It's just never been my thing. So why should I keep eating something that I don't even really like? So that's the end of that. I don't miss it at all.
I might eat people.
Well, I imagine you would, sure.
I'm very curious.
Yeah, that's part of it.
And I mean, contrary to popular belief, I was raised as a human being, not in a cage, things like this. And so I'm sure there's enough acculturation built up into me that it would be really hard to do. And so in that context, I mean, like, if a dude is just like, here, although I do have an agreement with somebody who I haven't talked to in years that whichever dies first, the other one's going to eat him. We had been reading Stranger in a Strange Land. These are the kind of promises you make when you read Stranger in a Strange Land and you're college age. But if something happened such that there was such a cultural shift and, like, that was okay, yeah, I probably would give it a shot.
Yeah, I don't.
Just to say I tried it.
I don't doubt that.
When I was younger, I thought a lot of indications were that human meat would be really tasty. Nowadays, I feel like it's probably the opposite.
Well, what a lot of people don't think about when it comes to this question about whether or not human beings are going to taste good.
Yes, what do they not think about?
They don't well, a lot of people aren't involved in meat production generally.
I know I'm not.
Okay, so, for example, a big thing that you do in meat production is you castrate the male animals young so that the male hormones won't make the meat taste, as they often say, gamey.
Really?
Yes. So when
testosterone people, will mess up the taste of meat.
Right, so when people talk about whether or not human beings are going to taste good, if we're talking about this the same way we talk about animal meat, which of course we would.
We should eat the women?
Or the younger people. Yes. So you see what I'm saying? I mean, a lot of people, when they think of eating people, it's like, oh, you're just eating somebody. Well, no, there's going to be a difference in taste from the men and the women and the younger people and the older people.
Babies are probably delicious.
That, I mean, based on how much people like, you know, veal and younger, I mean, the same thing applies. You know, it's not magical that that a young cow tastes better than an old cow. It's like human beings work the same way.
We should eat the babies.
Well, no, I'm not saying we should eat the babies.
E.O. William
I'm saying,
wants to eat a baby.
I'm saying that...
We're way beyond taking a penny here.
I'm saying when people hypothetically think of eating other people, they don't think of what it would mean if in our culture it was okay to eat other people. What it would probably lead to is young people...
Eating babies.
Well... It would mean young people getting killed for food. Or
babies eating babies.
Or young people...
Which would lead to mad baby disease.
Or young males being castrated until they're old enough before they're slaughtered. Just like with what we do with animals now.
We'd have to quarantine off certain countries because they have an influx of mad baby disease. Because if you eat babies that have been fed babies, they can get this brain condition.
That's right. All the practical problems involved in eating meat. There's lots of them.
Thank you, Jonathan Swift.
And they would all apply to humans.
Jonathan Siegel.
Just like they do with regular animals.
All right, I'm going to draw another question.
Well, no, wait.
We're still eating babies.
I brought this up because...
You didn't bring this up. Somebody asked you.
No, I brought this thing up about human beings and what people don't think about when thinking about eating. If you ate, like if you tried a person.
A baby?
I don't know. What if it wasn't a baby? What if you tried someone who was like a 20-year-old guy, was never castrated, just a 20-year-old guy? You would know that that 20-year-old guy who was never castrated is going to taste different than a 20-year-old guy who was castrated. It's going to taste different than a woman. It's going to taste different than a child. So would you also want to try... all those other kinds, too? Because technically have only tried one kind of human meat.
No, I do. Because you said it.
Okay.
I don't think I would, and I'll tell you why. I don't have that with beef.
Well, that's because all beef is pretty much raised the same. But have you ever eaten deer?
Yeah, I didn't like it so much.
Well, but you don't know what kind of deer you had.
I don't know.
Maybe you'd like something that came from a doe.
Baby deer.
Or a young deer, as opposed to a buck. That's going to taste, as they say, gamey, because the buck wasn't castrated and, you know, grew through to adulthood and then was slaughtered, like we do with cows.
This is turning into a Cronenberg film.
So the reason you don't have that with pigs or cows is because they're raised a particular way. But humans might not be, so there would be a distinct taste difference. Like, for example, now that you know...
You tasted awful. Your parents clearly didn't raise you right.
Now that you know that the deer that you had might have been a buck, maybe an older buck, and that maybe that's why it didn't taste good, aren't you now curious to have a doe or a younger deer? Okay, you're not. Okay.
I'm not saying I wouldn't eat it if you brought it to me, but...
If someone explained to you that this might taste different than what you've had before? Yeah. So
I won't turn away most meat.
Okay, so... My point being, you wouldn't be able to try human maybe just once. You'd have to try it a few times to really know
like
what you're
potato eating. Chips.
Kind of. No one can eat just one.
Can't eat just one human. This episode got really dark really fast.
We're just talking about meat.
Just talking about meat. so I can dig it. It's complicated meat. No one understands it, but it's women. Babies. Who is the meat that we haven't been able to try yet? Babies. Down with it. Complicated meat. No one understands it, but it's mama. Babies. That meat is one tasty... Shut your mouth. I'm just talking about babies. All right. I'm going to draw another one. Right. You guys should tell me how terrible this
is. This is probably our most messed up episode ever, though, really. Between you having the microphone right in your face... And us talking about eating people, like, seriously, what it would be like.
Need I remind you, we have an episode entitled Vomit Goblins.
That's nothing like this. This is way beyond the pale.
All right, this one is anonymous also and long as hell. All
right.
Why do Americans seem to distrust / fear / hate the government so much, yet are perfectly happy with private corporations over which they have no control and which exist solely to make a profit? Sorry, I think you dropped this. I think this belongs to you.
Well, to begin with, I'm not sure you can say that for all Americans. I think there are some Americans who feel the exact opposite of that. But in my mind, I fail to understand those people also.
William trusts no one.
To me, the corporations and the government, I mean, it's not that I think they're the same. I just think they cooperate so much with one another, and they both individually have all the same problems anyway, even if they didn't cooperate with one another.
And they faked the moon landing.
So I'm with you. I don't understand people who trust corporations and not the government, but I don't understand people who trust the government, not corporations, because no matter which of these camps you're in, it seems to me, just as this question suggests, that you could look at the group you do trust and see that they're pretty much just exactly like the group you don't trust. So why don't you trust them both or trust neither of them? Why do you pick one or the other?
There's a couple of belief systems.
Okay.
One belief system is the belief that the government is made up entirely of civil servants and that their point, their job, is to make things good for the citizenry. And that's their whole point. And implicit in that also is the belief that that's possible. Whereas in reality, there's a lot of other motivations, many of which are economic, which factor into all the decisions being made.
Well, there was actually a study done that looked at this. Carl Couch did a study about this in representative relationships, where if you have, let's say...
I still think Carl Couch sounds like the guy from Harry Potter.
Okay. you have two groups, and each group...
I think that was Barty Crouch.
...elects a representative.
Barty Crouch Jr.
And those two representatives get together, and they negotiate, you know, whatever the two groups want, have to agree on. What tends to happen in situations like that is those two representatives will kind of become a group unto themselves. The only way to prevent that from happening... In other words, just like you said, well, their whole reason for being is because they represent this whole other group and they're talking things out. But once they get together and they recognize one another's shared identity as representatives, then they bond over that. Mm-hmm. And that becomes their main thing. Not representing their groups, but being part of this special group of representatives. And the only way to... you can't prevent that from happening, but the one way to sort of overcome the the bad things that happen with that is to have an independent press sort of reporting what they're doing and what they're talking about. Because otherwise, they're going to go back to their constituents and they're going to lie about what happened. They're going to overstate what they were able to get or not get. They're going to basically say whatever they have to say to make themselves look good. And then when they get back together with their representative friend, they're going to laugh about all the lies they just told to their constituents. So the point here being that the sociologically speaking, it's just not true when you have people who are, you know, are in principle, that's what they're there for. But it never works out that way unless their constituents are just standing there, or the people who are paying their writing the checks, you know, paying their paycheck, are standing there watching them work, which never happens. And then, you know, that's why you have to have a press, an independent free press, to sort of address that, to keep that from being too bad. But you can't get rid of it. You know what I'm saying? And of course, now we have a press that sucks. So that's irrelevant.
Sucky press.
So the government. I know what a lot of people also think. Well, we can vote. You know, we have a direct line to vote in these situations. But see, that's even if you look closely, that doesn't really matter or have any kind of impact. Not any more of an impact because the people on the other side, their belief is, well, these corporations, they need money.
Well,
that's what keeps them honest is money, because they have to sell things, and if they piss us off, we won't go buy things.
Don't step on my second school of thought. I was getting to that.
All right.
The second school of thought is the belief that business is that concept of enlightened self-interest, and that the corporations want to make money, but the way to do that is with happy customers who will have a long and prosperous relationship. Whereas in reality, depending on the math, it can be way better profits to just take everything and kill you off.
No, that's right.
Or to fool you. I mean, don't get me that wrong there. You can totally make more money through lies than through truth.
The naivete here and the thing that people who subscribe to these schools of thought are sort of failing to grasp is that the principle they're talking about, like what you said, there's the self-interest thing on the business side. They have to have happy customers. They don't want to make people mad, or else they're not going to make money. And also on the other side of things with government, how these people are elected, they're there, they're accountable. All of this rationale actually does work if you're talking about small-scale kinds of things. If you're talking about a person that owns...
What?
If a mom-and-pop out...
You're saying that things work on a smaller scale?
On a smaller scale, that's right.
Really?
All the things that these people naively...
I've never heard you espouse such a theory.
All the things these people naively think work...
Or write three novels about.
On large-scale government
and
large-scale corporations.
Short stories.
They do work in the short... a small scale, like a mom and pop store. Yeah, they live in this community.
Your local Walmart.
No, not Walmart. They live in this community.
I spell it different.
They're related to these people. They want to have a long term relationship with these people and get along. So they're going to conduct their business in a very particular and very responsible way. And if they don't, they're not going to do business very long. This logic does apply to them, but it does not apply to corporations. Likewise, a government that's small, where the people, like as a like a mayor, for example,
like
of a small town,
San Marino,
not even a town as big as our town,
Luxembourg,
that person has to be accountable to people they grew up with, the friends and neighbors, and they have to live in the town that they're governing. So then a lot of the things that you think about government applies. But all of that stuff that applies to small, tiny, I'm talking tiny business, small business and small-scale government does not scale up. It just doesn't. And so people who attack big government but they defend corporations, they think they're, in their mind, they're standing up for mom and pop who own the gas station on the corner, but that's not what they're doing. Likewise, people who oppose corporations but are standing up for government, they're thinking of, the town I came from, a tiny little town where, you know, the mayor is elected every year for 50 years because nobody else is interested in running, but that guy does a pretty good job because he has to live in that town and get along with those people. No, that's not what federal government is like. That's not what state-level government is like.
I'm not thinking of that.
Well, I'm just saying, I know what principles are at work, but if you think that those principles apply to larger and larger scales, it's just not so. I mean, sociologically, scientifically not so, not ideologically.
I feel like everybody should have to take sociology courses before they graduate.
You know, I think they should take anthropology courses, because I think the big thing that people need to learn is that whatever culture they were raised in is not the only way to do things or the only way to think. They need to be open-minded about not just other cultures, contemporary cultures, but they need to understand how cultures in the past have worked and some of the things they did that, you know, actually worked just fine. I mean, maybe we don't do them anymore, and maybe we shouldn't do them anymore, but at the time they worked just fine. I think people are mostly ignorant of how culture impacts them. I think they're ignorant of what culture is and what is a cultural fact or truth as opposed to an actual verifiable scientific fact or truth. So if you ask me, anthropology is probably the thing that kids need to learn when they're really young so they understand these things.
Well, I should clarify when I said that they should learn sociology and take sociology classes when they were young. I was just making fun of you.
I know.
So were you just making fun of me?
No. This is what I do. You make fun of me, I take the opportunity to say something that I really think.
And I stop listening, so I don't
That's right.
Know.
That's what we do.
Recently, I was having some conversation, and I don't even remember the thing now, so this is not going to be a good story. But I realized I needed my own theme song for something. You know how you have, and then gives up.
How I have that one?
Yeah. There's something I do, I don't remember now, that I'm like, I need my theme song for that. But I can't remember what it was. Told you it was not going to be a good story. I mean, I delivered.
Really.
I delivered. If I say up front, I mean, frequently I'll say that something's an interesting story, and it's really not. So if I up front say it's not, then you know. Get ready for sleep. Speaking of which, essentially, what you've been hearing here, my little special voice like this, this is the voice that I use when I tell the story of the first time I filed taxes in the state of Iowa.
It's the story you've told on the podcast before.
Have I told that story?
Oh, yeah.
Did I put everybody to sleep?
Yeah, you told that story.
How far did I get?
How far did you get? To the end of it, I suppose.
I don't think that's possible. I don't think I've ever gotten to the end of it.
Okay, well, you told a lot of it. I'll just say that. And yeah, that's right. You used
this
little...
This is the voice I use?
Yeah, I think you pulled the microphone close. Or no, you got close to the microphone, because I think when you did it, we still had the snowball.
Since then, I've learned that you can pick up a microphone.
You leaned in. And you told the story just like
that.
Do you
remember any of it?
No.
Then I've done my job.
Nope, don't remember a bit of it.
See, so this is the episode that you can all use to fall asleep. Some people do fall asleep listening to our podcast. Did you know that?
That doesn't surprise me.
A couple people do that.
Because it's probably pretty boring for most
people. At first, it sounded sexy because they were listening in bed. But then I realized that they never hear, like, the last 10 minutes or so because they fell asleep.
Because they're so boring.
And then it was less sexy and more insulting. But so we are definitely into the part where those of you who fall asleep, you'll never hear this.
No.
So.
A person should play it for their kid that can't sleep at night.
If any of you hear this, let me know and I'll give you $1,000. I'm specifically referring to people who fell asleep and didn't hear this part. If you did hear this part, if you did, then you're not included in these people. I'll give you $1,000. So
our lawyers are not going to like you. I mean,
to look forward to.
I mean, everything you said there is fine, but our lawyers will not think that's cool.
To be fair,
it's their lawyers. What am I talking about?
Our lawyers have never thought anything I did was cool. Even goatee-less. Or should I say single goatee, Tony? I think we need to stop.
All right.
Because it's about that time. It's a little early, but I don't care.
Okay.
So go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and say things. See if you can type in this voice. I want to see what that looks like.
It's probably really tiny.
Very small. I don't know. I'm going to be curious how this sounds. Not curious enough to listen, but curious enough to say something right now. Go to the blog and tell me. Also, write the hat, because the hat feeds on human blood when it runs out of emails. So I've heard. That's what I've heard. I'm not going to say one way or another. That's the rumor, and I don't want to find out.
I don't either.
TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Go there and do that. You can like us on Facebook for shits and giggles. And then wait, because next week there'll probably be a real episode. And I've heard some of you like those things. So get out of here. And if you learn nothing from this episode, eat a baby, because they're the tastiest. According to William. William says babies are the tastiest humans.
I hate you.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.
Like, here we are at 2015.
Yep.
It's 3 p.m. It's true. Alright, I still like holding the microphone now, like I'm performing in a lounge act. How's yours working? Yours was on the floor when I got here.
Well, I don't know. I'm talking into it. What do you see anything on your end? Monitoring the wave,
the sound.
It all looks
kind of weird and more jaggedy than usual. I don't know what that's about.
Did you hear?
Did you hear Eddie?
As he was stuff? Talking. Oh,
there you go.
She's got quite a bit to say.
She just recently come off another food strike.
Happy New Year, I think, is what she was saying.
Yes. Anyway.
Happy it's 2015.
Hello. And welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that will continue recording in the year 2015. All the others are shutting down. Sorry if there were others that you liked. WTF, Nerdist, all the NPR stuff, all gone. We're it now. So.
Which means probably nobody will be listening to podcasts anymore.
No, but in 2 years' time, no one will remember what the word podcast means. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 199.
And this is Ezzy, but she's being quiet now.
And it is New Year's Day, which is the first time we've ever broadcast on New Year's Day.
Yes, although we should have seen it coming, given we broadcast for
on Christmas Day. That's
Christmas
right.
Day. It is a weird set, though. The first time we do Christmas is, understandably, also the first time we do New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
But then, after that, episode 200.
Yeah.
All together here.
All together.
It's amazing.
A whole string of auspicious episodes.
Yes. And it is still daylight outside.
Yep.
Because
we started a little early today.
Got the day off.
Yeah.
So,
might as well
I was like, you want to start early? And William was like, yeah, because I'm scared driving home in the dark.
Yeah, it gets dark pretty early this time of year.
It does get dark pretty early. And I was like, as long as it's not too early, because I'll probably be hungover. And so, here we go.
I take the interstate on the way here and on the way home, and tell you what, I've had a few close calls in the last 199 episodes getting back and forth.
Because of dark?
Mostly.
Oh.
Mostly. It's almost always, if it's light out, hardly any trouble, but Because, you know, between here and home, the on-ramps are also off-ramps, right? So when you're...
Some powerful stuff.
Well, meaning that when trucks are driving through Iowa City, they might not realize that, you know, someone's coming on as well as going off.
That's true. The one time I went seriously off the road in Iowa City was because a truck basically forced me off.
Yeah. And so I've run into those problems a few times.
But it was totally light up.
But I'm okay. And
well,
I will continue.
Relatively.
Yeah, I will continue to be as long as I'm very, very careful and I take the opportunity to drive when it's not dark outside whenever I can.
Yes. So how was your year?
My year.
How was your holiday season?
Oh, you know, it was good. It's the same as always. As people who have listened to these 199 episodes, my holidays are kind of like home movies or someone's slideshow of their vacation. It's interesting.
Norman Rockwell.
It's interesting to the people who are in them, but it's not interesting to people who are visiting.
No, come on.
No, it's the truth.
I don't think it's really interesting the people who are in them either. Well,
it is in my house. We like watching old home movies and stuff, but we understand that nobody else visiting would probably like that. So that's why I don't really talk very much about it, because, you know, I love going home and I have a great time when I go home, but there's just nothing that other people would be interested in hearing about. And we don't exchange gifts over the holidays, so I can't even talk about that.
So you didn't get any good holiday loot?
No. Is this the third or fourth time we've been through a Christmas?
I think it would be the full...
2011?
No, we haven't 14? Had our fourth anniversary yet.
No, wait.
But this 11, is our, 12, 13, this is 14. Our fourth, this is our fourth right here.
Yeah, so...
Our fourth holiday.
So just like the other three before it, I don't really have anything to talk about in terms of that. But you always do, so...
I get good stuff.
Yeah, we might as well just talk about all your loot.
It was a good year. It was a good year for giving. Producer and I did very well on our gifts, I think. Partially because we just got a ton of them to get. Like, we went way overboard with everybody. But they were well received all around. And we got some cool stuff. My niece and nephew both made us gifts. My nephew, he got these wooden frames and basically put customized Lego people in them. And ours is a roller derby girl.
Oh,
so that's
wow.
It was pretty cool.
That's cool.
And my niece took some, I don't know if it's real leather, I think it might be fake leather, and attached a snap to it, and then cut some grooves in it, and it's meant to be a power cord holder.
Mm.
Like, you stick the power cords through, and then you roll it up, and so they're all together. Mm. And I took it to work, because I've got chargers for everything at work, so I don't have to send them back and forth. And so my desk is just covered in cords, and so it was kind of helpful. My big present this year, things were more sort of consolidated in terms of, I basically got one gift from my in-laws as opposed to usual, where it's just tons of stuff. Mm. But it was a big one. It was a PlayStation Vita.
Wow.
I should have brought it out here to show you. For those who don't know, that is the current generation of portable PlayStation gaming device. I put it on my Christmas list. My Christmas list was very confusing this year because there wasn't really a lot that I wanted.
Hmm.
I just didn't, there wasn't much, and we're at a point now where if I want stuff, I can buy it, and I usually do.
Hmm.
So I was like, whatever. And so my Christmas list actually started with a big thing about how I don't need anything, don't give me anything. And then a second paragraph saying, I know some of you can't cope with that and need to get me something, so get me something you think would be cool. And then after that was, okay, I know some of you can't cope without getting me something and can't think of anything or are nervous about it, so here's some stuff I want. And even my parents. And my parents did pretty well. They got several cool things. My mother gave me a book of artwork from Susan Sedin-Boulay, who is famous. She did a lot of calendars and posters of sort of New Agey Native American-looking stuff.
Mm.
And I've always, in fact, I have a poster in the other room from her, and I always got her calendars. And my mother, my sister, and I always sort of shared an interest in her art. And she's dead for a few years now, I think. But this is a book collecting a lot of her stuff.
Well,
so that
nice.
Was very cool. And they got me a bathrobe, which was something I asked for. I said I wanted a new, big, fluffy bathrobe, and they got one, which is nice. And then they also got me pajama pants, which was hilarious, because they were worried that the bathrobe would be too short. And they thought, maybe you could then wear these pants, and then you wouldn't embarrass yourself. Which was true. It's a little short. It comes up just a little above the knee, so it's good to have the pajama pants. But it's a nice, comfy robe, big and fluffy, and has big pockets and stuff. I like it. So that was good. But, yeah, so I made the list, and there wasn't a lot on it, not even a lot of video games. But I always put the sort of big-ticket items on there, which are things like, if you want to get me whatever the next video, like on this one, I had a PlayStation 4 or an Xbox One or a Prius. A Prius is usually on there. and I put a Nintendo 3DS and a PlayStation Vita because I'm like, I've been thinking about getting them. And I'm sure I'd get some fun out of them if I'm not paying for them, you know, whatever. But I've been thinking for a while about getting one. Yeah. I kind of thought 3DS because it just seems to have more games. And originally the Vita had, like, no games, so did not care. But it's gotten better. One of my friends has one, and he swears by it. He actually has both, and he likes the Vita better. So I'd put it on there, but, you know, I'd just throw it on there. And that's what they got me. And I was like, ah, great, nice. Not really, you know, fine, it'll be fun or whatever. And I got a game. The problem is the network was down. Sony got hacked over the Christmas holiday.
Right.
And so much of stuff on the Vita, you log in, you buy stuff and download it.
Sure,
I couldn't do that.
Mm.
So, and also you need a memory card. Nobody got me a memory card. So I literally couldn't even play the one game somebody had bought me, like, on it. So the next day I go to a GameStop and I wait in line and I went a little overboard and spent like $100 and I got a bunch of games and stuff and came back and started playing it and I like it and I might like it too much. Like, I don't know that I have time in my life for additional video game platform. So I'm already playing a game it came with, which is called Gravity Rush, which is very fun. It's sort of an action RPG thing. I'm enjoying it. Protagonist, which seems rare these days. And then the other big one I'm playing a lot now is they did remakes of Final Fantasy X in HD, and they did that for the PlayStation 3, and I hadn't gotten it. As much as I loved that, I'm like, this is a lot. It takes a lot of time. I'm like, I don't know that I'm willing to commit, but on the portable, have it there whenever I want it. And it's nice, and, you know, the portable is just as powerful as the old PlayStation 2 that it came on, so it works fine for it. So I'm playing that, and then I've got a couple of games in the wings. In general, it's like the Japanese PlayStation Vita. So, like, there's a lot of Japanese-style RPGs, stuff like that, which is the kind of stuff I love. So, lots of games I've never heard of that are really cool. I would just say, if you're hearing this, then we managed to post it. But we might have trouble because my giving us grief. And I noticed that the little thing here is stuttering. I don't think it's affecting the sound. It seems to be catching up, but it's just a little weird. So, I don't know why I'm saying that, because if it doesn't work, you won't hear it. But yeah. So that was a lot. And did you do anything for New Year's?
Not really.
Did you even make it to midnight?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good job.
Yep. What about you?
We did the usual. Slightly complicated by the fact that we did yesterday off. So worked until 5. but then went over to the same place where we do our gaming. Uh-oh. Oh, no. We're still going. I think. Oh, I hope it sounds okay. It looks the same as usual, so. Anyway. So, yeah, went to where we usually have gaming, and the gaming group was there, and the producer was there, and some other friends were there, some of whom I met last year, and then there were new friends. It's kind of been a true time. We watch shitty movies, we drink too much, and we play games, and that's it. And so, but I was on Weight Watchers. So I had a certain amount of points I could do, and I had a cheat sheet of the different foods, and like how, so I got it all worked out. It was fun. We actually didn't watch just movies. I found out that half my gaming group had never seen Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and I consider that an affront to humanity to not have seen that movie. You hear that, little hatlings? If you haven't seen Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, go see it now, or else.
Well, I haven't seen it.
Go see it, you fucker. movie's awesome.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go home, and I'm going to watch Ghost Rider instead.
You're a bad man. You should feel bad.
I won't. Nope. I'll love it. I'll be thinking, ha, Tony wants me to watch that other movie, but I'm watching. Go
come on. Guy Pearce, Hugo Weaving, and Terrence Stamp, three drag queens on a bus trip through the outback. It's an amazing movie. Mm. And it holds up.
Yeah, Ghost Rider does too. I can watch
it. I'm sure Ghost Rider is the same level of quality it was when it first came out. I'm confident of that. By sole math. Because it can't get lower. Like, to get lower quality, it has to, the movie somehow punches you in the face.
Okay, fine. Paul Blart then. And Paul Blart Mall
Have Cop. You actually seen
Paul Yes, Blart? We've talked about this. I've seen
Seriously?
It. Yes.
What is wrong with you?
Instead of watching.
Well, tell you, my friends, because they couldn't find it because all the various torrents out there were shut down recently. So acquiring things on the internet is much harder now. So my friends actually bought a Blu-ray copy of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And on Saturday, we're gaming. We're having a big, long gaming session on Saturday.
How do you like it?
It went pretty well. We were kind of a rowdy bunch, so it was a little bit weird. And then there was the whole, everybody's Australian, so there was some difficulties adjusting to the accent. And we've never played Cards Against Humanity.
No, but I've heard a lot about it.
Have you played Apples to Apples?
I think I have played that one time.
I have not played the game, but as I understand it, it's essentially the exact same game, except super offense humanity is way more offensive. Bucket. Mm. Or secretly breeding elves for their precious, precious semen. That was a card. Like Apples to Apples, you have to get a lot more double entendre. Like, Cards Against Humanity is just awful.
Okay. It seems like so over the top, it's like this could be a middle ground that would be more offensive.
Possibly. And some of the cards aren't as obviously horrible, but this is the theory that I would not enjoy playing the game sober. I think I would find it kind of eh. But when I'm drunk, it's fucking hilarious.
Okay.
But so we played that. That was fun. And then we rang into New Year, and then we watched...
Not familiar with that.
I told you about this one. This is the movie... okay, let me get back up. Jack Chick. Famous, psychotic Christian cartoonist. The creator of Chick Track.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a particularly famous one called Dark Dungeons that is all about how D&D is of the devil. And it's... And it has had the opposite of most of the tracks, and the gaming community has adopted this because it's awesome. It's just so ridiculous. Like the one girl, her character dies, and so they throw her out of the place, and she goes and kills herself because her character's died. And meanwhile, the other one, her cleric becomes level 8, so they're fairly attractive middle-aged woman who's GMing for them. Decides it's time for her to learn real spells, and so she's inducted into this witch's coven and learns real magic and uses and things like that. And then eventually she's all super sad, and somebody shows up and says they've been praying and fasting for her because they told her Jesus is the way, and so she goes and maybe burns all her D&D books, I don't know, and this helps her, and it's wonderful.
What does she have to roll with Jesus will help her?
No, see, that's... somebody kickstarted this. I didn't realize
Jesus
this.
Jesus Initiative.
But somebody made them on it. Hmm. And it's only 40 minutes long. And it was for very little money. And we weren't sure. Like, we were sure it was going to be hilarious. We weren't sure if it was going to be hilarious on purpose. Like, we didn't know for sure if this was a fan of Jack Chick making this.
Because,
I mean, there was that movie Mazes and Monsters years ago with Tom Hanks. Back in the era when people believed D&D was about Satanism, and there's this movie where they play essentially D&D, and Tom Hanks goes crazy and almost kills himself because he can't differentiate fantasy from reality.
Never heard of it.
Not many people did, except to be like, holy shit, Tom Hanks was in this movie about how evil D&D is. So we didn't know if it was going to be those people or if this was somebody, if these were gamers who found this hilarious. And either way, it would be really funny to watch, like Reefer Madness. And what it turned out is to be the second one. They clearly know. They work at it. And in fact, lots of references to like other comics and things. And I'm pretty sure a couple of references to Happy Jack's RPG podcast, which was kind of amazing. But yeah, they alter the story slowly, so they're in college, and it's these two friends who are very devoutly Christian, and then they end up in the RPG club, which is where all the scary rebel kids are who wear leather jackets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
leather like, jackets, yeah.
Well, and they go to this RPG party, and it's just this giant rave at first, and everybody's like drinking and going crazy, and then afterwards they whip them up into a frenzy so they can play D&D. It's hilarious.
And that's not how you guys
play? I was like, this was never, we were never this cool. and there are a whole bunch of really overt sort of jokes about the fact that one of the roommates is secretly totally in love with the other roommate, but like won't admit it and all this kind of stuff. So we've got bits like, we have to go to this party or else we'll just be hanging out together alone in our room all night. And what fun would that be? And the other one's like, yeah, what fun, you know, that kind of stuff. And but they fit in all the lines. They've got the lines about, oh, now you're doing spells for real, and I don't want to be Elfstar anymore, and all that. It's hilarious. So that was really fun. And then came home, and really pissed myself off. So I've been losing weight, as you know.
Yeah.
I'm down 28 pounds now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the side effects is my wedding ring is kind of loose these days.
Mm.
It's not this morning because of all the crap I ate and drank last night, so I'm a little bloated. But anyway, it's kind of loose. And last night, remember, I don't really drink very much anymore, but I drank a lot last night.
Mm-hmm.
So I was ridiculous. And it's about 2:30, and I think I went back to like pee or something and came back out here, and I suddenly realize I'm not wearing my wedding ring. And I have no idea when that happened.
Mm.
And I'm like, shit. A, because I love my wedding ring.
Sure, sure.
And I have no idea where it is. And also because I make fun of guys who lose their wedding rings. And now I can't. But there's not a lot. I looked some, but I was hosed. Like, I was not good at looking right then. 2:30 in the morning. So then this morning, and I walk out in the hall, and it's right on the floor. And I was so relieved.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally figured out what had happened. Because I realized I hadn't taken my diabetes pill in the evening. And so at 2:30, I was like, I got to take it. And it was in the pocket of it just put on the floor.
Right.
So I bent down to get, and then the ring fell off, which happened right before I noticed it. So not only do I know when it happened, but I know that I wasn't like an hour before.
Before
that
you noticed.
So now I feel better, and now I feel like I can still judge guys who lose theirs. So that was good. Squirrel.
You know what I realized this holiday season?
Well, what did you realize this holiday season?
I did some with my family to find out what kind of holiday observances my grandparents
had.
Oh,
shit.
What's the matter?
We were getting my father 6 months subscription to Ancestry.com, and it was supposed to start today, but we didn't actually do the thing, so it can't be starting today.
Sorry.
All right.
Didn't mean to bring up that.
Go ahead, then.
Anyhow... And I found out, and I wasn't surprised to find this out, because all the research I've ever done on both sides of my family, my mom's side and dad's side, probably pretty certain that everybody fell on a spectrum of being either antagonistic toward holiday observances, you know, because they're pagan or papist, to being apathetic about them. Like, we have Methodists in the family going clear back to when Methodism first started or first spread to Northern Ireland, and of course the Anglicans
back when it was called Madnessism.
The Anglicans observed Christmas, but
they said, look over there, it's Christmas.
But there are two things about one,
that's Christmas,
for
right.
Many years among Catholics too, or people in the pre-Reformation church, Christmas was just another part of the liturgical year. I mean, you know, you showed up the Advent season, right? And then the homilies about it, You didn't like
another part of the liturgical year.
Yeah, you didn't. You didn't like decorate your house or shop for gifts or
no twinkle lights.
No, nothing like that. It was just. I mean, for you, for people for the Reformation.
What about the Rose Parade?
No. There might be, like Easter. There might be a bigger deal made because
that's when you put up your Christmas tree and your lights.
You wouldn't probably do anything around your house, but it was a big deal at the church. Just about every other time, because in the Christian church,
mm-hmm.
there's pretty much stuff going on all year long.
Testify.
It's not just Lent
mm-hmm.
or Advent during Christmas. Yeah. There's stuff going on all the time. And you as a person going to church, you really only know about this stuff because you show up, oh, there's the priest, he's wearing the specific robes for this time of year, and he's going to homily about this time of year, and that's it. That's the way
it was.
What
about the newsletter?
For everything. So my...
Dear parishioners,
my Methodist
been a busy season.
Ancestors probably also didn't really care very much about it. And not only that, it looks like my Methodist ancestors from Dad's side were very independent, like... They didn't care for the episcopal structure of the Methodist Church, so they probably also sort of rejected Christmas for that reason. So I wanted to know.
So you come from a long line of people who say fuck Christmas.
Well, holidays in general, it's like just not their thing.
Mm.
Now,
so they got especially mad when salespeople would say Happy Holidays, not because they wanted them to say Merry Christmas, but they were like, "Fuck holidays!
Here's the thing,
you bastards!"
I'm not sure it was that unusual.
Happy Ashura.
In the United States, in the early days of the United States, for people to, like I say, either be antagonistic toward holiday observance or apathetic toward it. Mm. You've had a few people maybe who weren't like that, but I think the rule was very close to what my ancestors were like. But at some point, they started observing things.
Because Santa.
And see, my mom would decorate for everything. I mean, she decorated for St. Patrick's Day, Christmas.
I feel my family did too, but I think that mostly had to do with I had always made some bullshit decoration out of construction paper and cotton balls, and so my mom would put that up, and so then she'd put other stuff up, presumably to make crappy, I don't know.
Well, and my parents also attended public school where they would be going through these crafts and things.
Yeah.
So I wondered if she was influenced more by that than by her family. All of that said, we didn't decorate for anything more than Christmas, and the Christmas tree was like the main thing.
Just one?
Yeah, just one.
Wimp.
I know.
My mom had six.
We've talked about this. But
even my mother-in-law has like two.
What I found out was that my parents' parents.
You mean your grandparents?
Yes.
All right.
They didn't decorate anything really except for Christmas at all. And then when they decorated for Christmas, it was pretty much just a tree. Sometimes have a wreath or something. Otherwise, it was just a tree and not heirloom ornaments or anything like that.
Yeah.
Cheapo wards. And maybe they do the popcorn stringing or something or whatever, but. Otherwise, that was it for the whole year. You just had a Christmas tree.
Why do you think they did just it. Even... It sounds like they had no fucks to give.
Well...
So why bother?
This is what I think I've discovered. And I don't know if anyone's ever done any research on this.
Your family? No.
But this is what I think happened.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think for most people in the early United States and in the colonies before that, I suppose, Christmas wasn't a big deal. Again, something they were either antagonistic toward or apathetic toward. But in the middle of the 19th century, both Santa Claus and Christmas trees both stopped being things that were perceived specifically as immigrant or pagan or papist. They started to be regarded more as something that was American. To be fair, they were. Santa Claus, as we know, is not... I mean, he's an amalgamation of Father Christmas and Sinterklaas and St. Nicholas and all that stuff. We know his tree observances we have are heavily Americanized from the Germanic...
You know that Coca-Cola thing is a lot, though.
No, yeah, I know that.
Right, just
but
mostly for our listeners. I don't want to say, yeah, Coca-Cola invented it. No, you're wrong. Look it up. Read a book.
But
learn to Christmas.
At some point, my ancestor, with most other people, decided, oh, we can have a Christmas tree and we can tell things about Santa Claus because it's not... an immigrant thing, it's not a pagan thing, and it's not a papist thing, it's just an American thing. And so they start doing it.
Now we're getting back to heat miser and snow miser.
No, but there's an irony in this, because every season people talk about how Christmas has been secularized. And the truth of the matter is, we wouldn't have Christmas in its present form if it had never been secularized.
Take that, Bill O'Reilly.
I'm pretty sure that's the case.
I would believe that. I people say Christmas is all about consumerism now, and I'm like, that's why it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't, large swaths of the population, Night Mass would probably still go to Night Mass. But the people who don't do any of that shit, if there wasn't the buying of things to happen and all that, probably wouldn't participate.
I think any research anyone would do on that topic would find the same things true. And here's another piece of evidence.
And it's silly to think that people have swapped out the spiritual overtones for the consumerism stuff. No. They did nothing, and then they did the consumer stuff, like most Americans of the time.
Well, here's another piece of evidence in favor of that. Look at St. Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I have no idea what that one's
Well,
about.
Just about everybody celebrates it in one form or
yes,
another.
And I don't
but
know what
does
it's
anyone,
about.
Yeah.
Didn't a bunch of people get killed?
Yeah, is it about St. Valentine's? No.
It's about the massacre?
St. Valentine, I should say. No, it's... But Christmas is no different. You can see Valentine's Day, and even St. Patrick's Day, even though, you know, probably a lot of Irish Catholics who
well,
probably...
Well, there's a lot of weird shit tied up in there.
Yeah, who probably, you know, take it very seriously, and maybe other people would too. But both of these celebrations...
Dye the holy water green.
Everybody looks at these and they see, okay, well, here is a typically Catholic celebration that got commercialized and secularized, and that's why the rest of us celebrate it. Well, Christmas isn't any different.
Uh-huh.
But I think a lot of people think it is. I mean, they talk like it.
Yeah.
But I think they're mistaken.
And
certainly for my family, they're mistaken.
Reminds me of something. I saw a movie, besides the ones I already mentioned.
Okay. What'd you see?
Well, my Trish's sister's family, she has two kids and a husband, they kind of started this New Year's Eve tradition where they get pizza and then they watch a movie that everybody can watch together, usually a Christmas sort of themed movie, and they invite us over because we're usually there for Christmas, so we can come over Christmas Eve if we want. We've watched Elf. I forget what else watched. But this year there was Rise of the Guardians, which is funny because technically it's not a Christmas movie, although I do believe it came out around that time. Technically the whole point of the movie is set at Easter, but it involves all the holidays and all the mythos.
I've seen. Alec Baldwin voices...
voices...
sort of the Christmas guardian.
Yes, it's called North. In a way that I kind of really like. Yeah, there's a lot of big names, actually, in that movie. Surprisingly, we're enjoying. I really liked it.
I thought it was okay.
It was good things about it that bugged me that it not been as good it would not have.
Yeah, you just would have thought, hey, this is crap.
Well, and it's a kid movie, you know, and apparently it's based off of a series of kids' books, and I don't know how this ties in. But I will, because I think I can do this without spoiling it. The thing that I think bothered me most is, it's a kid's movie, generally not a lot of moral ambiguity in these things. The good guys are good, the bad... Unless somebody has a sudden change of heart and switches sides, but when they do, it's hard or one way or the other, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's at the end of the movie, bad things happen to bad guys, and good things happen to the good guys. All the usual shit. They sort of went out of their way, possibly because of the source material did it, to put in some moral ambiguity, in particular, to make the villain quite sympathetic to me. I was quite sympathetic to him. I found the villain to be sympathetic, and I felt bad for him.
I don't recall, but...
And then his ultimate end was very black and white and terrible for him, as though, as it would be in a lot of these movies, because they're just, oh, he's evil. But I'm like, no, you humanized him, and so now I feel really kind of horrible about what's happening to him. Mm-hmm. And so that was awkward for me, but it was an interesting bit of mythology. But it was creative, which you don't get a lot of these days.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
So I enjoyed it, and yeah, and it's totally family friendly. If you get real young, it could be a little scary.
What always strikes us with these things is, as I'm sure that you notice too, about these great mythological characters who are the guardians of all these things, and they're mostly lies.
Yep.
We, I realize people will get really annoyed that I harp on this. Here's a perfect opportunity because, you know, you'd think that the
Easter
cosmic...
Bunny doesn't have to be a god.
No, yeah, you'd think that the cosmic guards of something wouldn't be preferential to one sex or the other. That's...